Enjoyed our song service this morning, and I appreciate the prayer that was uttered to begin the service. And I said last time I was here that it's when Brother Gary had, and Joe and I believe Brother Stephen had told me that the church had asked me to come and serve as interim pastor following the Brother Ed. Brother Ed would, I understand, keep one Sunday a month, the second Sunday at least for now, and but the church had asked me if I would consider that, and I said I'd want to pray about it, and I'd bring back to you today. And I never thought, never planned to be a minister. I said I'd never be one. And I said, well, even if it were somehow that happened, I probably would never be a pastor because I didn't know how to oversee the flock. And I've learned to try to be submissive to the Lord's will, and my feeling is that I should be submissive now to what the church has asked and follow the Lord's will. And I do this based on my trust in the Lord and my trust in the congregation. You know, kind of jokingly, you know, I don't know that I trust any one of you individually, but I do trust your collective wisdom. And my prayer is that the Lord, through me, will hopefully help provide blessings to this church and guidance to the church. And I know this church is important to me. I love this church. I love the fellowship. And it's been a real blessing to me the times that I've had been able to come down here and join you. My basic feeling about, of course, a pastor of a church is that there's criteria for pastors to teach and to be a pastor and a shepherd and also to teach, but also be able to be available to help when needed. And so I have two basic thoughts. Number one is that, you know, you need to have a pastor. We're told in the 21st chapter of Matthew that the Lord has turned over his church to us. This is turned over. He's spoken in a parable of the vineyard, but how the Lord gave his vineyard to the Jewish people at one time, and they didn't produce fruit from it. In fact, that they killed the people he'd sent for the vineyard. And Jesus then decided, as he told the Pharisees, he said, therefore I say unto you, the kingdom of God shall be taken from you and given to a nation bringing forth the fruits thereof. And so the Lord gave us the Gentiles, gave us his church. It doesn't mean that there's not a lot of other people that are not in the church that may not be, that are clearly are the elect and children of God. But he's turned over his church, the keeping of his church, to us. That's under the guidance of the pastor, but it's also with the participation and praying and activity of all the members thereof. And our duty is to produce fruit. And as Brother Gary said, that's spiritual fruit. And we do that by our works. Now, we're not getting saved by our works, but as James tells us, faith without works is dead. This church has been very impressive to me, and I know it's been impressive to others by the way you have turned this church around, which we were afraid was in trouble at one time, and through the work of a lot of you, you've turned this church around, and that's impressive. And I have the fear of that, but I also have hopes that can keep going because the Lord has clearly blessed this church, and my prayer is that he would continue to do so. So I'm willing to come and participate in that so long as the church desires for me to. My plan would be that out of the three Sundays a month, the first and third that I come, plus the fourth today, that the church would allow me some freedom and discretion to invite some visiting ministers in here for you to see from time to time. I believe that we're given, as we're told in Scripture, apostles and prophets, which I don't know if any of us claim to be those, but he says he also gives us evangelists, pastors, and teachers. Pastors and teachers are to come and on Sunday in and Sunday out, teach and pastor over the flock. But the church still needs evangelists from time to time. And we've got a number of ministers, both in West Texas and outside of West Texas, that can be evangelists and also could be pastors. And so I hope you would never have to worry about me inviting anybody, but I'll work with the deacons and we'll try to get some visiting ministers in here that can see this church. And also the church can have an opportunity to see and hear them and be blessed by them. Whether or not any minister would be the one you'd want as pastor, I think it's also good to have that variety. But another part of my philosophy comes directly from the Apostle Paul in the book of Titus. In the book of Titus, Paul is writing to a minister named Titus, one of his underlings, I'll call him that for lack of a better word. We know Timothy, it's mentioned over in 2 Corinthians and also Galatians. Apostle Paul writes to a bunch of the ministers he has working with him, Timothy being the foremost one we know. But Titus was also one of those that he writes to. And the book of Titus is based on that. And he says, Paul, a servant of God and apostle of Jesus Christ, according to the faith of God's elect. Now again, a lot of people don't believe in election, but there can't be an elect unless you've had an election at some time in the past. So he talks about that, and he says, in writing to you, in hope of eternal life, which God, that cannot promise, cannot lie, promised before the world began. So our eternal life, the promise of that was given us before the world began, and that's when God made the election, and those elect do not change. Verse 4, he says, to Titus, mine own son, after the common faith. Paul was his father in the ministry, and so he's writing to his son. But he gives Titus a command, a direction down here, and again, this goes to part of my philosophy about churches. Verse 5, for this cause left I thee in Crete. I left you in Crete for a reason, there in that part of the area, that thou should set in order the things that are wanting. Go around to the churches and help get them in order, set them in order, preach to them, make sure they're following the right gospel, and to ordain elders in every city as I had appointed thee. Apostle Paul tells us also one of the duties of the ministry is to raise up elders and ministers from within and inside the church. I certainly feel this church is no exception and may be blessed in that regard. And so I think the church also needs to look at elders that may potentially be raised up with inside the church. And that'll be one of my ideas and suggestions that I'll be recommending to church as we go through this, bringing in some ministers, but also encouraging some men within the church who might be raised up to be elders themselves. I believe that a pastor is best if it's one that's locally. Not always possible. And, you know, when this church was down, Brother Ed came in and came pretty faithfully and regularly and has helped the church a lot. I've tried to do that too, and I'm a little closer. I'm within a couple of hours, but even then, my basic philosophy is that a church is better if it has a pastor that's local who can respond and visit people in the hospital and take care of those needs of the church. But then, even then, that's why we have annual meetings and special meetings, is to bring in evangelists so that we can have the full gospel preached. An evangelist can come in without knowing the local politics of a church or the local situations. He can preach full counsel and provide a lot of great benefit to the church. So that's my basic philosophy, and I'm willing to, at this time, submit to the wishes of the church and serve as your pastor until the church decides to make a more permanent decision. And I have no concepts or precepts as to who that might be or whatever, but I do think we need to wait on the Lord and not get in a hurry and let the Lord make those decisions. Anytime there's any question, Usually it's because we're trying to get ahead of the Lord and we're trying to make a decision that the Lord can make a lot better than us. Especially if there's any indecision among the members of the church as to which direction we need to go or what we need to do. I've learned a long time ago the best time is just put it on hold and let the Lord bring all the minds together. Encourage everybody to pray. And a church is doing that, the Lord will put the minds together and come up with the right conclusion. So that I'll say that by way of introduction. I have some other thoughts on my mind this morning, and I don't know, y'all may find it a little bit strange. I'm seem to be here lately, I'm into a little bit of a show and tell mode. So I've done that again this morning. I want to, by introductory remarks, I want to talk to you a few minutes, and I'll come down front and talk. I seem to enjoy that, and most time people think I'm doing that for the younger people, and I am, but this is intended for younger people no matter how old you are. Okay? Let me start that, and then I've got a few comments I want to come back and speak on that. I've got some things with me this morning. Let me step down here. Hope you can all hear me. Sometimes I'll make a mess. Everybody know what that is? We use it, don't we? We use them every day. Kids, we use them every day, don't we? There's no question. Yeah. We brush every morning, every afternoon. Whenever our parents tell us, we go right in there and brush. Sure we do. We all know that. You see what I'm about to open here? What is it I'm about to open? Toothpaste. Now, y'all know what this is for. Sometimes I make a mess doing this, even in front of my little sink. That's a hoot from time to time. But you know how, y'all know how this works, and y'all have seen this work before. We take some toothpaste here. Put it on a toothbrush. I don't like a lot of toothpaste, but sometimes it's a little hard to get out of the tube. Oh, my God. I got one attended. I didn't intend to get that myself. That happens to me from time to time, and I make a mess on my bathroom sink doing that. But I'm also wasting a lot of toothpaste. Brother Gary, can you help me? Would you put that toothpaste back in the tube for me?
Yes, sir.
Kind of hard to do, isn't it? Once it gets out, I can't put toothpaste back in the tube. It's a real problem, isn't it? You know, and we do that from time to time, and that's one of those unique things about, you can't, once that toothpaste is out, you cannot get it back in the tube. It's out. You know what else is like that? My mouth. Sometimes I'll say stuff, it comes out of my mouth, and I wish, well, I wish I hadn't said that. If I could just put it back in my mouth. Can't do that, can you? Once it's out there. And a lot of times in my relationships, in my work, in my relationships with other people, I say stuff and I may intend it one way and they may hear it a different way. And I'm going, well, I wish I hadn't said that, or I wish I hadn't said it like that. But it's a little too late now because it's out. And I can't put it back in. You know, that's one thing that we've got going on right now in the world, especially even in our federal government. We say a lot of stuff that we probably wish we hadn't said. You know, from time to time, we tend to hurt those that are closest to us because we'll say stuff. I'll get mad about something. I'll get mad at somebody, and I'll take it out on my spouse, my kids, those that are closest to me because I'm mad about it, and I'll say stuff to them that I don't intend, that I don't mean. My frustration should be to elsewhere instead of goes to them. But once you say it, those words have consequences. They hurt people's feelings. And I hurt people's feelings sometimes when I'm not even trying to because I'll say stuff before I really think about it. If I'm having a busy day, especially in my office, you know, and if I'm having to argue with another attorney or do something like that, I'll be frustrated, you know, and they'll call and say, you know, somebody's on the phone. One of my kids might be on the phone, a spouse or a family member, you know. I'll pick up and say, hello! You know, I'm letting the person know that, you know, that I'm mad and I'm frustrated. Now, they haven't done a thing to me, but I have responded in a very poor way that put them on the defensive. They didn't deserve that at all. You know, we all do that from time to time. You know, we get mad at people from time to time. You know, when you get mad and they'll say something to us, and I'm going to say something back to them, and I'll say something that I wish I hadn't said. You know, I want to get them back, and the more we go back and forth, the worse it gets. You know, we do this all the time. You know, of course, and I work in the area of law, and so I see some situations in which, and that's one reason I try not to practice family law and to do divorces, because husbands and wives who love each other and still love each other in many ways, there's a fine line I've learned between love and when they get mad and hate each other. But husbands and wives tell each other intimate things from time to time. And you'll see them when they get mad, one of them will bring those things out and use it against the other, which should never be done. But once it gets out, we can't put it back. You know, one of the problems we've got in this modern world is, you know, we talk about talking all the time and saying those things. In this modern world, we've gotten, and especially with the new generation, and we're all getting into it a little bit, I may not talk directly so much as I used to, but I'll text them. You know, when we text like we're talking to people. It doesn't always come across like that, because sometimes in writing, it doesn't come across quite like it does when you say it. You can't see it. You know, and I've learned, I had to figure this out, if I want to emphasize something, or if I want to holler at them, I'll put it in all capital letters. I had to learn that from some of the kids, some of my kids. You know, and I used to put stuff in capital letters for fun, somebody come back and say, why are you hollering at me? You know, and right, that's what's when you want to talk loud and you holler, you put it in all capital letters. It's taken me a while to learn the codes. I've talked to my kids about this a number of times and a number of other kids about texting and tweeting and emailing and those type of things. Those have taken the place of talking in so many cases because we don't talk as much because we agree instead. You know, I've seen kids that will text each other only a few feet apart and they'll do that in talking, but the problem with texting and tweeting and emailing is it's not private conversation. We've learned that at the federal level. You know, you email and you text and you tweet, and it becomes public. It gets public a lot of times, many more ways than we ever think about, and the whole world knows. That's why it's become more important today, because those are used like talking. Those are used so much like talking that we do it, and I know I've had to speak to my daughter a couple of times about stuff she's put on Facebook, and she says, well, why has somebody written that? It's not supposed to. You know? Everybody reads it. I say, yeah, it's world. And not only that, not only can I not take back the words that are in my mouth, if I say them and you only say it to a small group, maybe that's only where it gets, the only place it gets. If I put something on text or email or Facebook, it's there for the world to see forever. You know, we tried to hire a young lady a while back in our law firm, and she was an impressive lady. They knew credentials. We interviewed her. She was very good, and we thought it was excellent. And we were about ready to make an offer to come and join our law firm. And then it was called to our attention that she had a Facebook page, and there were some things on that Facebook page that really bothered us. So we ended up not hiring her. You know, again, people assume those things are private when they're not private. And that's what makes the world scary today, even on this subject, about when we say things, we have to be very careful about what we say. The Bible teaches that, and I'm going to talk about that in just a moment. But we say stuff when we don't mean. We say stuff that we don't intend. And when we do, we can't take it back. That's why it's important that the Bible teaches us that we need to be careful in the way we talk and the same things we say. And that would include today's world, emailing and tweeting. You know, when you really want to communicate with somebody good and you're sincere about it and you want to do it, I still recommend you do it in writing. Nobody writes it. Here a while back, I had the occasion to write a couple that had a major problem, and it caused them great grief. And I sat down, I had to just cry. I felt burdened to do this. I sat down, and I took a part, and I wrote them a letter. You know, and I had to back up, start over again, because I had to go and think about what I was saying. I put it in writing. And when you put it in writing, in your own handwriting, you tend to be much more careful and guarded and pick out the words you want to use. That's why I like writing actually better. I can't tell you how many times in the Banner of Love when I'm writing or writing the column that I put together. I'll back up and delete out that last sentence. I can do that there. I can't do that when I'm talking. But I'll do that. And I wrote them a letter and tried to express to them my concern for them and how they would still love them. And I know they had problems. And the Lord leads us into those problems every now and then, sometimes for correction and sometimes for perfection. And they let me know very quickly when they received that how thankful they were. They went out of their way to contact me, and I was real glad I did it. When my son was in college and he turned 21, it's one of those things you don't communicate with your kids very well. None of us do. The Bible teaches us very good instructions about we're not, dads especially, are not supposed to speak dad and sons, you know, without doing it in a corrective and compassionate way. Same way with mothers and their daughters and just parents in general. Parents and children in general. But I sit down and I wrote my son a letter. I told him, you know, think like I love you. How proud I was going through school and getting out of school. And mailed it to him just thinking, I need to do that. And I don't think I've ever done that, so I did that. And I was inspired to do that because I have a letter that hangs on my wall that my grandfather wrote me when I was born. Didn't know me, whatever, but he wrote me a short letter, one-page letter, when I was born and who I was, what my heritage was. And my wife took that and framed that letter for me as a birthday gift for me. And I've been proud of it. I hang it up on my wall today. I was a keeper. When I wrote my son, I wrote him that letter and sent it to him, and I didn't think anything more about it. And 2 years later, he moved home, and I was helping him move home. And he has a little blue folder there with his important papers in it, things that he needs to do and renew. My letter was inside there.
that's when words do matter and they do make a difference. We need to be careful about what we do and what we say. Those who have your Bible with me, go to the 50th chapter of Isaiah.
50th chapter of Isaiah. Isaiah here gives us some really good advice. One of the things that I want to tell you that you already know, and it's a legal concept. It's a legal concept that every one of you have heard. You know it. You may say, I don't know that much law. I can almost guarantee you every one of you know this one. You've all heard it. In fact, I could probably let you finish it for me. And it goes like this. It's a legal concept, a constitutional right you have. You have the right to remain silent. Things you say can and probably will be used against you. That's why it's important that we be careful what we say. 50th chapter of Isaiah tells us in verse 4, the Lord hath given me the tongue of the learned. That's a great gift, if you can say the Lord's given you the tongue of the learned. I've learned how to use my tongue. I've learned when to use it and when not to use it. Solomon tells us over in Ecclesiastes, there's a time to say things and a season not to say things and a manner in which we should say them. The Lord hath given me the tongue of the learned that I should know how to speak a word in season to him that is weary. Now, you can know somebody that's weary, it's important that we talk to them. And I encourage you, when you have somebody that you know has got a problem, and you know some people that I can't go talk to you about your problem because I'm going to break down. Sometimes I'll have a little difficulty with the kin folks or relatives or something. If I go speak to you, I'm going to break down. You know, I can write it to them, and it's there forever. And that's what Isaiah said. The Lord's given me that gift, and we need to pray the Lord would give us that ability to speak to other people, how to speak it, that I should know how to speak a word in season, when and how, what manner to say it. To him that is weary, he waketh morning by morning, he waketh mine ear to hear as the learned. It's the last part of that that I want to focus on a little bit. He hath wakened mine ear to hear as the learned. The Lord gives us two ears and one mouth. That tells most of us we ought to hear at least twice as much as we talk. You know, when I try to talk to counsel with people, most of the time I've learned, and it's taken me a long time to learn to do this, not only as a husband and a father, but even as an attorney. When you counsel with people, most time all you need to do is listen. If you ever spend money to go to a counselor, they'll ask you questions and want you to talk. They're here, they're there. We pay them to listen to us. And by doing that, we get great benefit from that. And that's what the Lord tells us here through Isaiah, is that you get great benefit in listening. We ought to hear more than we talk. Again, you have the right to remain silent. You know, that's a legal concept, but it's an important spiritual concept too. We think we have a right to speak, and we do. We know that legally. But Isaiah tells us you really ought to be listening. The Lord gives me an ear like a learned man. A learned man learns how to listen. You have the right to remain silent because what you say may be used against you. That's a legal concept. That didn't come from law. That came from the Bible. That came from our problem with talking. All of us talk too much. I talk way too much. I speak too fast. Sometimes I'll be listening to somebody and, you know, me and my smart mouth, I've learned I shoot off my mouth or I'll make a wisecrack too fast. Sometimes when, you know, in the past when I know for years I learned this the hard way, that my wife would have some problem and she'd start talking and within about 10 seconds, I'm a guy, I'm an attorney, I try to solve problems. I have had to work in politics and the government and had to solve problems with people. Immediately I'll jump in and say, here's the heart, here's what you need to fix it. And I had to learn the only way, I don't want you to fix it, I want you to listen to me. And we need to listen to people. There's more we can do listening to people. Not only our friends, but our spouses, even our children. We all want to be understood and sympathized with much more than we want to be given direction. And we'll take direction a whole lot more. I'll take direction from you a whole lot more, and I think it's both ways here, if I think you understand my problem. You don't understand it if I haven't told it to you yet. And that's what Isaiah says. You need to thank goodness the Lord gives us an ear to hear like a learned man. James, over here in James chapter 1, book of James, verse 19, he said, "Wherefore, my beloved brethren, let every man be swift to hear, slow to speak, and slow to wrath." Be swift to hear. Be willing to listen first up front before we get ready to talk. You know, our tongue gets us a lot of trouble, and that's the very nature of man. The natural man, our tongue, is what causes more problems than anything else. And I, over the period of time, I have learned to appreciate James's words in I believe chapter 38, and I hope to get back to that in a minute before we close today. But James teaches us that no man is able to tame the tongue. And that is absolutely the truth. We don't tame the tongue because it's not in our nature. It's our nature for the tongue to be wild and ramble. And like I said, I have to learn to control my tongue and what I say and how I say it, when I say it. When I ought to listen more, so that's when I want to learn more. Romans chapter 3 gives us, and y'all are familiar with this chapter, but I want to focus on a punch. Romans chapter 3, beginning with the 10th verse, where the Apostle Paul tells us about the natural man. Natural man, we're not righteous. We have no way to be righteous. Without the Lord, we're not righteous at all. And that's what I say when no man can tame the tongue. Only the Lord can give us the grace to tame our tongue. Natural man won't do it. And that's what Apostle Paul tells us in the book of Romans, chapter 3, beginning in verse 10. As it is written, there is none righteous, no, not one. And then look what he tells us right off the bat. There's none that understandeth, none that seeketh after God. They are all gone out of the way, and they are altogether become unprofitable. There is none that doeth good, no, not one. And then he gives us examples. Their throat is an open sepulchre. That's a grave. I mean, you know, that's talking about, we say things, you know, and we use words we shouldn't be using. We talk in language, we use curse words, we use obscene words when we're trying to make emphasis sometimes. And he tells us there's no need of that. Many times we use words in which we blaspheme God. We'll take the Lord's name in vain. That's one of the primary curse words that is used pretty regularly. A lot of times when we're little kids, we want to use some of these curse words so we can sound big. You know, have you ever gotten in line? Maybe it's been several years ago now. I was in line at a grocery store line behind a lady and her young boy. I don't know if it was a son or a grandson. But he was trash talking. I mean, it was the worst words coming out of his mouth that I've ever heard. And I went, you know, obviously I know what they are because I've heard them all. I probably said too many of them that I shouldn't have said over the years. But they're coming out, and that's somebody we don't want to be around. I don't even want to be around somebody. I know that you know, all of us in our times, even the great Apostle Peter, it says, you know, when he was confronted about denying Christ, it said he cursed. Even the great Apostle Peter had the same problems with the natural man that all of us have from time to time. But he said, this is the unrighteous, this is the natural man in all of us. That's a natural man. That's not coming from God. Their throat is an open sepulchre, and their tongues they have used deceit. That's our natural way. That's what we do. Brother Joe and Brother Stephen and Brother Gary and I were talking this morning about, you know, our natural way. The natural man is this way. We have a hard time. You know, we said we'd all like to persevere in righteousness and be right, but we can't. That's the struggle Apostle Paul said. You know, those are the things I'd like to do, but I don't do. I don't persevere with works of righteousness because we all, our tongues use deceit constantly. The poison of asp is under their lips. Their mouth is full of cursing and bitterness. Now, that's a natural man, and that's why I said, you know, without the Lord, we can't tame the tongue. And we ought to be asking the Lord on a regular basis to help tame us. Go back. Another example is Proverbs. Proverbs chapter 6. I find this is interesting. Proverbs chapter 6, beginning in verse 16. Again, this is, y'all know this. You've heard it before. But there are the Lord, I mean, Solomon here, through the Lord's inspiration, Solomon gives us what he calls seven deadly sins. Let's look at those briefly. Seven deadly sins, number one, verse beginning, he said, the sixth thing does the Lord hate, and seven are an abomination. Verse 17, a proud look, a lying tongue. Lord hates a lying tongue. Now, you know, is there anybody among us, now you're different from me if you have, that's never told a lie, not even a little white lie? You know, we all want to do that and all inclined to do that, but it says the Lord hates a lying tongue and a blood and in hands that shed innocent blood, a heart that devises wicked imaginations. Now, wicked imaginations don't become harmful to other people. They don't really become wicked until they're put into action. Most of the time, they're put in actions by our mouth, what we say. We're over there in 15th chapter of Matthew, the Lord tells us, you know, what comes out of your mouth comes directly from your heart. All that wickedness originates in your heart, and the mouth is the tool that we use to proclaim those wicked imaginations. A heart that devises wicked imaginations, but it's delivered by the tongue. Feet that are swift in running to mischief. Running to mischief, many times we're going and again we get there and our mischief is created by the what comes out of our mouth and the direction we take. A false witness that speaketh lies. Now it's different than a lying tongue. A false witness is when we're going out and we're hurting people by the things we say, the gossip we do, the slander, outright slander. Slander is a malicious intent to hurt somebody. When we say stuff and spread rumors or spread gossip that hurts somebody else, that's what they're talking about here. That's a false witness. We're doing everything I can to make someone else, if I say that, look someone else look bad. And I can't say that I hadn't been guilty of this from time to time when I look back over my life and think, you know, I may have been trying to gain an advantage over somebody else. That's the natural man in us that comes out. That's what we ought to be asking the Lord to help us with. A false witness that speaketh lies. And he that soweth discord among the brethren. How do we sow discord among the brethren? Through our mouth. If you'll notice, all these six deadly deals, nearly every one of them, are either originate or are, the mouth is used as a tool to commit all of those so-called deadly sins. Lord tells us and instructs us on each one of those. Go to Proverbs over here, chapter 12, on these we've talked about. Proverbs chapter 12, verse 22. Lying lips are an abomination to the Lord, but they that deal truly are his delight. You know, sometimes we think we have to lie. If I get some pressure put on me or a question put on me, I'm worried about what the answer is. I think maybe I need to embellish this a little bit or I need to lean it my way a little bit. We're better just to be quiet. We know a lot of times us parents, and, you know, I didn't understand this as a kid. I understood it as a parent a lot about, you know, tell me the truth. You still may get in trouble, but you're not going to get as much trouble as if you lied to me about it. Telling the lie is as big. You know, we have this at the federal government. A lot of times we'll have our politicians that kind of get themselves in trouble, but their bigger problem is trying to cover it up. And that doesn't change from when we're a little kid. The time that we're a politician at the national level. And you all know I won't get into politics, but that's a lot of the problems that they're going through today. Go back there a page or two to Proverbs chapter 10. Proverbs chapter 10, verse 18. He that hideth hatred with lying lips, and he that uttereth the slander is a fool. You know, we don't hide our hatred. I may get unhappy or I may get jealous with Brother Poe back here and I'm going to say something about him that either I'm going to misrepresent it or I'm going to make it look like book bad to him so that I can, I may be under, y'all know I'm joking about Brother Kendall, but I may say something about him that'll try to make him, you look unfavorably toward him. that's actually slander in any form, even in its mildest form. But if I'm doing that intentionally or purposely misrepresenting him, then I'm committing slander. And he tells us, you're a fool to do that. And again, I spoke about Solomon's wisdom last week. This is the wisest man in the history of the world. And he tells us we're a fool when we do that. In the multitude of words, there wanteth not sin, but he that refraineth his lips is wise. You know, my dad used to tell me that we'd go to a public meeting, so I'd go with him and kind of learning how to be a newspaper man. We covered a lot of public meetings. We'd go and hear people speak, and there's always one person who wants to get up and talk and talk and talk. If you've ever been to a town hall meeting or a public meeting, somebody will get up there and talk and talk, and somebody's always trying to cut them off. And my dad was never really in favor of cutting them off. And he said, you know, we all know what kind of guy that is. And he said, I think you should let him talk. He said, because you can remain silent and let people think you're an idiot, or you can speak out and remove all doubt of it. And that's what we learn about people. And, you know, and that's what he's Solomon is telling us here. He that refraineth his lips is wise. You know, some of the best thing you can do sometimes, especially if you're in a hostile situation, is just don't talk. You know, you and Brother Gary and I, again, these are all, I'm playing with everybody here, but Gary and I break getting in an argument, I'm in a real heated argument, and he's trying to argue with me, and I'm arguing back with him, and he's going to say something, well, I'm going to step it up a notch and say something else. Sometimes it's better if we just be quiet. Better wise. If you get in a heated argument with somebody, sometimes it's best to say, well, I understand your position, and that's your opinion. Brother Gary, was one thing he said this morning, I say that, but that's my opinion. And that's the best way to answer somebody and say, you know, without agreeing, I'm not going to agree to what you're saying, but just say, I understand your argument, and I understand that's your opinion. There's no reason to go any further. Most times you're not going to convince somebody else when you're in an argument with them. You're arguing for reasons that are not really what you're arguing about. You're arguing because you have a basic disagreement underneath. That's a lying. That's the false witness. Go over here to Proverbs 11, for me, the next page, verse 13. This has to do with gossiping. And, you know, I'm probably as guilty as anybody else. I hear some news, and we all like to hear news when somebody that's at a high level comes down, because we like to see that among people. That's our human nature. We ought not be like that, and we ought to pray the Lord not be like that. But that's what he's addressing here, verse 13 of chapter 11. A talebearer revealeth secrets. I can't wait. I found out this good, juicy gossip on Brother Joe, and I want to go tell everybody. You know, I want to have the opportunity to do that. That's a secret, maybe, that, and somebody may reveal it to me. And I mentioned this a while ago about, I see this so much in divorce cases, where husband and wife will reveal maybe things that were shared with each other in a moment of intimacy that are embarrassing outside world. And it ought not be that way. But a talebearer revealeth secrets. But he that is of a faithful spirit concealeth the matter. He that is of a faithful spirit. We need to remain faithful to those things that we know are of secrets for other people. Proverbs verse 17. The one last one on there that I want to talk about was discord. Over there, the one of the sins was he that goes spreads discord among his people. Proverbs 17. Beginning verse 14. The beginning of strife is as one that letteth out water. It's like opening the floodgates. The beginning of strife is when one opens the floodgates. Therefore, leave off contention before it be meddled with. That's meddling and that's gossip. If there's something contentious, we're better not to get it started and bring it up. Number one, you're opening floodgates. You're better not starting the argument. Most of the time, we argue about stuff that we know we're never going to agree with. That's usually how most arguments begin. If it's an argument, we've already raised it above the level of a discussion. And the discussion is what you ought to be having, and you ought to respect opinions and disagree or agree with them. I can't tell you why this came to me. I remember talking to my dad when my mother got sick, and I would go home and ride with my dad when he would be going to speak on a Sunday morning, because I could help drive for him. And that's when then as a college kid, I didn't think much about it except just trying to help my dad out. My mother, now it's a great period I look back on in which I was able to spend some time with my dad in his older years, when I realized now the wisdom he had over that period of time. And I would say something, I said, well, you know, that's the guy that wrote you the ugly letter and he said bad things about you. You're not going to respond back to him. You know, he's picking a fight with you, and you need to respond back. And we have this every now and then. I'll have somebody that'll do this, and as an attorney, we get really used to this kind of stuff. Somebody was going to pick a fight with you, and somebody will say something ugly to you. Well, I got to say something ugly back to them, and I've got to step it up a notch, you know. And you start getting in that, and each one of you has to raise a level, and then you start bringing the stuff you know you shouldn't bring, but you can't avoid it in the heat of the moment. And my dad used to tell me, he said, well, that guy that's after me and picking on me, he said, you got to remember, when you get in a mud fight with a pig, you got to recognize the pig's enjoying it. You're in their territory and you're in their field. And so many times you get in an argument and you realize if you'll stop and think, there's not going to be any win to this argument. I'm not going to settle this. I'm not going to convince them ever. So why should you lower yourself down into the pig pen? Because other people, you know, there's some people who just want to argue. That's what they live for. They live for the opportunity to argue. And don't let yourself be pulled down into that. Turn with me now to James. I said I'd end up in James, and we'll close out on this. Go to the book of James, chapter 3. This is the problem with talking. James chapter 3. My brethren, be not many masters, knowing that we shall receive the greater condemnation. For in many things we offend all. If any man offend not in word, the same is a perfect man. If you can go through this life without not offending somebody, then you are perfect. I don't know of anybody like that. And is able to also bridle the whole body. And he says, verse 3, behold, we put bits in the horse's mouth so that they might obey us, and we turn their whole body. We put bits in the horse's mouth so that we can control which way they go. Verse 4, behold, also great ships, which though they are so great, they are driven by and are driven by fierce winds. They're huge ships, and the fierce winds drive them, yet they are turned about by a very small helm. Just this very small rudder in the back will totally change the direction of a huge ship being driven by wind. Verse 5, even so the tongue is a little member and boasteth great things. Behold, how great a matter a little fire kindleth. The tongue does more damage than anything about us. It has the ability to do more damage. It's like that small rudder on a great ship. It can turn a ship into the fiercest winds, and it can start a small fire that grows into a great fire. We know that many of the great fires we've experienced are brought about by a little fire how it started. Verse 6, and the tongue is a fire, a world of iniquity. So is the tongue among all our members, that it defileth the whole body, and setteth on fire the course of nature, and it is set on fire of hell. For every kind of beast and of birds and of serpents and of things in the sea is tamed. We've tamed, we've gotten control over this whole world. We can tame the beasts, we can tame all the animals. You know, we domesticate all these animals, we catch fish, we can almost, there's no animal that not can be brought under the control of man. We can be tamed. And hath been tamed of mankind. Verse 8, but the tongue can no man tame. It is an unruly evil, full of deadly poison. We need to treat it like that. We don't think about that in ourselves, that we're somehow a deadly poison. But I know I've offended people without thinking about it, usually because I speak too quick. Sometimes I'll hear an issue and I'll step in too quick before I've finished listening to it, and I offend someone because I'm trying to provide an answer before I have listened to them and really understand their problem. I'll leave you with this thought that I found. I don't remember where I found it now, but I found it a long time ago. Try to practice what I have soul. S-O-U-L. Have soul. Number one, be silent. When you see somebody has a problem or they want to talk to you, be silent. You don't have to talk. You need to listen. And that's what helps people more than anything else. It helps others. Not only going to help them, you're going to look much more favorable in their eyes if you'll just be silent and listen. That's S. O, observe. Be quiet and observe. There's so much in body language that we can see. And I'm fixing, you know, what I'm trying to do is I'm fixing to make you a better philosopher and a better, hopefully, I'm not, the Lord is, a better philosopher on how to deal with people. Be silent and observe them. You know, us husbands fall into this boat all the time. We don't really observe our spouses. We don't observe them. We don't watch them. We don't listen to them. And we're not silent. That's my problem. I want to solve the problem immediately. I'm a problem solver, so I want to do it real quick. And I need, sometimes the problem is solved just by listening. Certainly the problem is solved most of the time with us by just listening. If you and I have a problem and I'll come in and I'll say, okay, explain to me this problem. And I'll sit there and listen and not interrupt and let someone explain it to them. And I will watch them and watch their body language. I've gone a long way in communicating with them, even though I haven't said a word. Be silent and observe. Number 3, S-O-U, is understand. I want to understand your problem. Again, this is each of us serving each other. It's a big part of us knowing each other in the church. A big problem of knowing our spouses. You know, we joke a lot about it's hard to understand. I'm leaving my wife, getting divorced because she just doesn't understand me. That's the oldest line in the world. It's probably true, but they haven't gone to trouble of trying to understand each other. We ought to listen and understand. If I say anything, it's all exhale. Now, explain what you mean by that to me. Explain to me. Why do you think that's so? I ought to ask questions that encourage the other person to talk. I need to be listened. I need to be, as Isaiah says, swift to listen and slow to talk. But be silent, observe, and understand the problem. And the L, of course, is listen. Be silent, observe, understand, and listen. That's simple. I hope that simple acronym helps. It goes really, but it's going to help you. It helps us in the church, helps us in day life, helps in our work. But it helps us in the church because when you go back and look at the very nature of man, these basic problems of our sin, probably 90-95% of our sin is sin that's caused right out of our mouth by saying things that we ought not be saying, by addressing people, by how I will be offensive sometime to people, not even realize that I'm being offensive. But most of our sin originates in our hearts, but it comes our mouth. Our mouth is the primary tool. It's what the Lord tells us in, be swift to listen, be careful what you say, measure words. If you've got a very important conversation to have with somebody, whether it's your child or whether it's your spouse, you need to think about, as we said, there's a season to say something, when to say it. I don't need to pick it a time. I need to pick a time when I have the opportunity to listen, to talk to them, observe, and time we're not going to be interrupted. And then we need to be able to figure out how to say it. I don't want to say it in a manner that's going to be offensive. Once it's out of your mouth, you can't take it back. We don't need to say stuff in anger. Be slow to wrath, but be ready always to listen and observe and understand and be quiet. I thank you for your kind attention. My prayer is that the Lord will richly bless each of you. Brother Gary, do we have a song?